Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Under the Radar SFF Books Podcast. I'm your host, Blaze, as always. Thank you so much for listening and joining wherever you may be around the world. Today, I'm being joined by epic fantasy author M.L. Spencer, the author of Dragon Maids, which back in 2021 was my top read of the year. I absolutely love it. I love the characters. I love the world. I love the magic. And we're going to talk all about it today. So, M.L., thank you so much for joining me and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, anytime. The pleasure is all mine. So I know we have a lot to discuss with Dragon Maids. We're just gonna gush about it the whole time. But as opposed to that, why don't you take us back a little bit? So how did you come up with the idea for Dragon Maids when it first popped into your head, and why did you want to write this story as one big like epic standalone as opposed to a series?
Well, I think what happened is I came up with an idea for the world first. I love fantasy map making, and I was drawing a map one day and I made a big squiggle across the page, and I started thinking, okay, where do I want the water to be? And I realized it could be on either the left or the right of the line. And I started thinking, wow, I wonder if I could make like a world where it's like the mirror reflection of itself. And that kind of came into the whole split world of Dragon Mage, where you have the world above and the world below, and they're pretty much identical copies of each other, but the world below still has magic in it, whereas in the world above it's pretty much been completely like wiped out. So I came up with the idea of the world first, and for the longest time, like literally years, I was world building like in my free time with this world. But I had no idea of what characters or what story to populate it with. And I had a couple of false starts. I came up with a couple of ideas that I just kind of got into a little bit. I'm like, no, this is not what I want to write. And so I kept trying and trying. And then one day I actually wrote a short story. And in the short story, the main character was a little boy who lived in a fishing village. And he was just, he was a big reflection of me as a kid, basically. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is my character. This is the character I want to cast in this world. And kind of all of a sudden, just boom, the whole story kind of just hit me. And I'm like, oh, well, here it is. And I just got a big gush of like just creativity, and it just took off like amazingly fast, like a brush fire, I guess. Why did I want to write it all in one book? Honestly, when I was a little girl, my grandma used to take me to the bookstore all the time, because that's what we did back then. It was before Amazon. So we would go into the little local bookstore, and I would search through the fantasy shelves to get the book of the week. And there came a time when, thin fantasy books just didn't last the whole week, because I was a pretty voracious reader. And so I started like just looking for like bigger and bigger books. And it got to be, I wouldn't even like leave the bookstore with a book that was like less than 2 or 3 inches thick. And so I just really wanted to write that kind of book myself. And the story that I was building just was kind of growing and growing and growing. So I was like, okay, we're going to do this. So that's how it came to be.
And you did it very well at over 800 pages. We just fly through this. It's a page turner. It's so engrossing. You just fall in love with the characters. And that's one thing I very much appreciate about this work. Well, you mentioned when you were writing the short story about the little boy, Aram, you thought that this is your character. This is your story. That's what I felt when I read Aram, because as I was growing up, I was a very introvert kid, very shy. Didn't really have a lot of friends, always wanted to fit in and couldn't. That, and Aram, he's like that. He's in a fishing village. He wants to be a fisherman, but all he does is he plays with knots, and he's incredibly gifted at it. And also you add the element of Aram being on the spectrum. That just adds another layer to his character. And that's one of the reasons why he's so touching with me, is that he's trying to fit in, but you feel like he doesn't know his place. It feels like he's not necessarily part of the environment around him, and he's just trying to find his way. And then when we get into it with Marcus, who's also a son of a fisherman, and they end up being friends, and it goes from there. They end up being really good friends for the rest of the book. Talk to me about Aurum. How was he constructed in your mind when you were first writing this?
Aurum is basically a reflection of what my childhood was like. I'm on the spectrum too. And I didn't know this when I was little. All I knew is that I didn't fit in. When I was in elementary school, I had like a really hard time. I was kind of ostracized. I was bullied. I was told I was weird. Nobody wanted to play with me. I was constantly alone. Nobody would sit next to me in school. And I didn't know what was quote unquote wrong with me. I just knew it must be something really terrible. And I didn't have a clue. So I would try different things to fit in and nothing really worked. And it wasn't really until I got into high school that I really started being able to, I guess, interact in a way that I was able to start making friends and finding a crowd and stuff like that. But it took me a really long time. And the whole time I was kind of alone as a kid, I would get kind of like hyper focused on certain topics and they would last for years. I think the first thing I got kind of fixated on was dinosaurs, and I could tell you every type of dinosaur and just all these tiny little trivia facts about them. It was really annoying. And then I got into horses, and same thing. I just read every book I could about horses. I could tell you everything about horses. And I would just not shut up around the adults in my life. I would just talk about horses all day long, every day. And this kind of stuck with me all through my childhood, and eventually, you know, it actually like turned so that I was fixated on writing, and that's all I could think about was writing, and that's all I did was writing, and it actually kind of propelled me to be able to become a fantasy writer. So this kind of hyper focus and sense of being different and alone and kind of ostracized and not knowing where my place was, or even just like an idea of why I was different. I had no idea. I've kind of put all that into Aurum, and that's kind of how his character came to be.
Thank you for sharing your story. That's one of the reasons why he comes across as such a likable, lovable character, especially with people who had like a harder childhoods growing up, not fitting in with people. Really hits home, and I really appreciate that. Well, his gift is involved in tying knots, which leads directly into the magic system that you do in the world. It's all around essence and knots. And you see Aurum's special abilities, like he sees the essence of people and whether they're good people or bad people. And can you just talk to me a little bit about how you came up with like the knot magic system and how it influences the world? And we can get into the world above and the world below, in which has magic anymore, so to speak.
Okay. Well, the magic system, like you said, revolves around knots, knots of ether, basically, in the air. I don't even recall how the first idea of a knot actually came to me, but it did, and I got all of a sudden really interested in knots. So I bought a few knot books, and I became obsessed with this one book called, and I highly recommend it, it's called The Ashley Book of Knots. It's this early 20th century like sailor's book where it literally like features every single knot in the world. And this guy who wrote it, Ashley, literally hand drew out like every single knot. It's the most absolutely amazing book. So I really got into it and I started tying knots myself. And I just started like making like diagrams of knots and like what they could possibly do, what they could be used in. And that's kind of how I got the magic system started. But there's a little bit more of a complication to it than that. I mean, okay, so you got the idea of essence. Not everybody can see the ether. And it takes somebody with this essence inside of them, or whose body actually kind of produces it, in order them to even see it, you know, much less touch it, or as Aurum can do, see everything kind of the ether in color, which allows him to do things that are absolutely extraordinary. So it's something that he's born with. It's something that's passed down from generation to generation, especially among the people that Aurum is descended from, which is kind of like these people that are not quite human called Ald. Ald is kind of my answer to elves. I don't like elves. Elves are extremely generic, hackneyed, and I don't know. There's just something about them that has never set well to me. So I just wanted to kind of create my own kind of people that were elf-like, but still human enough to not have those really annoying characteristics that your classical elves have. That kind of like the holier than thou kind of I'm better than you because I'm ageless kind of quality. So that's kind of what I came up with.
A little bit of controversy, not liking elves is part of, it's part of the culture. Now you gotta put your own spin on things, and every new author I read tries to put their own spin on stuff that's been done before, and it adds to the genre. It doesn't take anything away. So that's fantastic. The next one I want to talk about is Marcus. Now Marcus he's the big strong boy. He has a lot of friends. He's very good looking, and he sees Aram being picked on in the village, and he wants to help him. So he befriends him, and then during there's a skirmish that happens, and then he sees that Aram's blood does not bleed red, it bleeds brown. And that sets off a whole chain of events where they realize that Aram has magic because of how you said he was born with it. He sees the essence. He can create his own essence. And because of that, there's other sorcerers in the world. Am I pronouncing it right? Exilari?
Yes.
They try to find Aram and Marcus because they learn that Marcus, he is an Imperius. He is immune to magic, and that becomes very important in this world, as we'll find out later. Hopefully we get to talk about it a little bit. And because the Exilari sorcerers cannot create their own essence, so they hunt for people who can, and it's a whole chain of events. So first question is, talk to me a little bit about Marcus, because he always seems like the bigger protective brother, and he always wants to do the right thing and help people out, and he gets caught in like this whirlwind of events for the rest of the story.
Okay, well, again, I think Marcus kind of came from a character that actually existed in my world. when I first got into high school, again, I was pretty alone. I had no friends. and I would just kind of, I remember I got into band, but again, I didn't really fit in. I was kind of a loner. And what I would do every day at lunch is I would just sit outside the band room every day by myself reading books. And that was my existence. And then one day, this girl came over, this senior, actually, I was a freshman. And she just sat down next to me and started talking. And she was my friend. And I'd never really had a friend before. And the attachment that I felt to her was just massive. And she kind of became my protector at school and defended me from people who were trying to tease me or whatnot. And, you know, the impact she had on my life was incredible. I mean, it was probably at that moment that I became a person who was capable of, you know, talking, socializing, and actually developing more friends. And so Marcus is kind of her personified.
Now, it's interesting that you say that Aram and Marcus are written after inspiration by you and your friend, but you wrote them as boys. Why did you want to do that as boys, not young women?
Oh, you know, that's an excellent question that I have never been able to answer. Every single book that I've ever written, I have had male protagonists. I've tried writing female protagonists, and it doesn't work for me for whatever reason. I don't know if I kind of have to fall in love a little bit with them myself or what, but yeah, I'm so much more comfortable writing a male protagonist than a female protagonist, and I can't explain why.
Well, you do an excellent job of writing the male protagonist, so I'm not going to stop you from keeping that up. There's one of the Exilari sorcerers who we actually get first person point of view characters on, a very interesting character to follow. He has his own set of orders. He has his own set of beliefs and influences and how he wants to do things, but he's also taking orders from this magical being known as the Archon. So he's hunting these two characters, and the ultimate use of wanting to use them in like the army as part of the sorcerers. Was seeing like your viewpoint into like this magical world, and what were you hoping to show through his eyes in Dragon Mage?
Excellent question. Sorgon is kind of like the embodiment of all that went wrong in the world above. The world above is kind of the antithesis of the world below, which is, I think, you're kind of almost quintessential, Gaia principle, where everything is like happy, healthy, part of the world. The magic comes from the world itself and bleeds into everything. And all that has been kind of devoured and desecrated kind of in the world above. And Sorgon is definitely, I mean, we're not going to call him a vampire, but he certainly acts vampirically, drawing essence from these things that are wonderful and good and full of magical, in order to use for his own corrupted kind of, I guess, motives and goals, which he sees, of course, as being justified. He sees himself as a protector of his world, a defender of his world in a way. He's also highly ambitious, and I don't think that Sorgon would necessarily classify himself as a good person. He knows that he's not, but he also thinks that he is working for good in his own malicious, malignant way.
Yeah, he definitely comes across that way. He's like vampiric and looking for his own. He's putting himself first in many of the instances there. And one more character I wanted to discuss, and we don't meet him till like core like the second half of the book. But Esmir, he kind of took on the role was kind of like the old mage, like the trainer, the one looking after the other characters. And when you hear his story, and it's just sad, but it's like how much knowledge and how much wisdom he has to pass along. It's just something I loved reading him. Hands down, one of my favorite characters in the book. Was this your take on kind of like the Gandalf old mage type of character, and how did he come about?
God, that's a great question. I don't think I really saw him as Gandalf, but more of just, I don't know, a has-been. I wanted somebody who had just completely failed at life and failed at everything, kind of on a redemption arc, I guess. And so that's where I kind of got Esmir from. And I wanted his. He is definitely a quintessential mentor. And I wanted his training of Aurum to kind of propel him along this arc. And honestly, I don't think Esmir's arc is over. I see him as possibly going further, redeeming himself more and becoming more of the person he should have been before tragedy befell him.
Yeah, and that's excellent. And you're right. He is there to assist Aurum in his journey to become a champion, which has not existed for many, many, many years. And I actually just reread a little bit about it this morning. The trials that you put Aurum through, those are some of the more grueling scenes that I've read in fantasy. Was those trials? Is that something you had like before you've written it, or is that something when you're writing it and all of a sudden you're thinking, oh, it has to be this, 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 and this, because they're very vivid and they're very, very dark, but I just eat that stuff up.
I really think that they were kind of conceived at the time. I write kind of, I'm an outliner hugely. And before I even sit down to write a book, I've already outlined pretty much every chapter in there. But the weird thing is about kind of the second half of Dragon Mage, a lot of it would be, okay, in this chapter, we've got trials. And that's really all I did, which is unlike me. That's very unlike me. So when I did sit down to write those scenes, I was just kind of coming up with things on the spot and kind of, I guess, pantsing it. And that's something I normally don't do.
I was get you a little bit out of your comfort zone. It's sometimes it works, and in this case, it worked tremendously. So those are fun scenes. I just wanted to say, I'm holding the book right now, that this cover art is just breathtakingly gorgeous. When you sat down with the artist, and
It's Suthiwa de Chancampo.
yeah, I can't pronounce it. Looking at it right now, how did this come about?
normally I've worked with Situate in the past, and what I usually do is I either hand sketch or I just like by copy paste, like crop like little things and try to make a scene out of it. And that's what I give to him. And then he creates magic from my absolutely impoverished vision. And so that's kind of what happened here. You know, I gave him like a little stick figure of a guy with a sword and this like stick figure dragon and said, yeah, just stick it in a canyon. And he came back to me with that. And I was just in awe because honestly, it's amazing.
Yeah, like words can't describe how beautiful it is. As soon as I saw it, and I saw it on like on Twitter, and like looked, I'm like, I have to have this. And then as soon as I got it, I just blew through it because it's so much a page turner where you leave the readers wanting more, like at the end of each chapter. That just makes me just keep reading a chapter after chapter after chapter. Is that the type of book you yourself like to read, like just like page turners like that, or do you like more like slow burn type adventure stories? Like, what do you like to read, and how does that go into the books that you write?
Oh, I definitely like page turners, and I like long descriptive books that do have like that little cliffhanger at the ending of each chapter that keeps me turning the pages, kind of like the first, you know, three books of The Wheel of Time, stuff like that. Not necessarily the stuff in the middle of the series, which got a little bit, you know, a little bit more boggy down.
Right.
But definitely the first three books, you know, Jordan very much wrote so that there was a cliffhanger at the end of every chapter. And it's also just the way I wrote when I sat down to become a fantasy author in college. And I would kind of put myself through my own like self-education on how to become a fantasy author. That's one of the mantras that I taught myself was out of the frying pan into the fire. And I was always determined to end my chapters like that whenever possible.
So you said you wanted to be a fantasy author when you were young, and then was that the first like spark to saying I want to be a fantasy author, or was there like an aha moment saying I want to try this and I want to do this? Like, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I think I started writing when I was very little. Again, I was very much alone, and I did a lot of things to self-entertain, and definitely one of them was writing my own like little books. So I was actually very, I guess, insecure about it. I would literally hide in the house writing. And then when I heard people like coming down the hallway, I would quickly like shove all my stuff into my desk and act like I was doing something else. When I was in about the seventh grade, I wrote my first like kind of like short novel. It was absolutely terrible. But, you know, from there, I kind of started working up. When I was in college, that's when I decided this is what I really want to be when I grow up. I want to be a fantasy author. And I started taking a lot of creative writing classes. I started like learning on my own. I started reading every fantasy novel I could possibly get my hands on just to kind of educate myself in that and kind of trying to educate myself in the publishing world. And that's kind of was my goal in life for a long time. Yeah, I kind of got pulled away from it for a while, but then I came back to it later.
Well, we're so glad you did. What were the books when you were reading as a child that inspired you to want to become an author? And is there any of those influence that were directly involved in Dragon Mage and also maybe your other series as well?
Okay. Well, I think that my favorite books when I was growing up was obviously Lord of the Rings. Anne McCaffrey's Pern, you know, with her dragons were huge to me. That's pretty much where I fell in love with dragons. Wheel of Time came along when I was in college, and oh goodness, I was a fan. I mean, every single time a new Wheel of Time book would drop, we would show up at, we would like my friends and I would all like pile into the car and show up in Barnes and Noble at midnight waiting for that book to drop. No, I'm serious. It was bad. I was in clubs called Dark Friends. And we would get together for dark friend socials at like local restaurants with all of our Robert Jordan books and have huge discussions like who killed Asmodean and stuff like that. It was a huge thing. It really was. Beyond that, I mean, Raymond E. Feist, David Eddings. I mean, so much. I mean, I read everybody, Tad Williams. George R. R. Martin kind of came along toward the end of it when I was kind of already on my own path to becoming a fantasy writer, but he had a huge impact on me. When I sat down and first started reading the Game of Thrones series, it was unlike anything I had ever read before in its darkness and its realism. And that definitely had a huge impact on the way I write.
Well, don't feel bad about the Wheel of Time sitting out waiting for books. I grew up when the Harry Potter was like rampant and people were waiting for book seven. Like outside, I was not one of them, but I do remember that craze. So no need to worry about that. Now you also have another complete series, the Ren Wars saga. Could you tell us a little bit about that? That's a series I have not read, but very much looking forward to it.
That's definitely grimdark and more inspired by Game of Thrones, I guess. I wrote the first novel, Dark Mage, when I was in college. That was probably my first serious fantasy novel. And it kind of went through a couple of revisions before it came to be what it is today. And back then, self-publishing wasn't a thing. I sent it out to a few agents, got massive rejections, sent it out again, and just it got rejected massively all over the place. And that's when I became extremely disillusioned with writing, chucked in the towel, said, this isn't for me, I'll never make it. And I put it away for 10 years, and I became a teacher, I became a mom. And then one day, somebody at work with and I were talking, like, yeah, I wrote a novel way back in the day. And they're like, oh, let me read it. So I did. I gave it to them. And they came back going, wow, this novel was really good. Oh, my gosh. And that was kind of like, oh, wow, really? So I got it out. I dusted it off. And this is when fantasy self-publishing was first starting back in like 2011. And I self-published it. And I had no idea how to market it. I had no social media. I had nothing, really. I sent it off to like one awards competition, and it won. So it won the Indie Reader Discovery Award. But it completely bombed on Amazon because nobody knew it existed. And so I kind of went my own separate way again from, you know, writing books for about 5 years or so, thinking, well, I'm never going to be an author. And then somebody actually wrote this terrible review on it on Goodreads, just awful. I'm like, this is terrible. Oh my gosh. They pointed out like all this stuff that I think I did wrong. I'm like, well, I'm going to fix this. I'm going to write like another book and revise this one. And so I did. And I really made an effort to actually market that one and get out there and just put it in front of bloggers, put it in front of people. And I got hyper-focused on that. And, you know, that's the power of my hyper-focus. I got it in front of everyone, like literally, and it became a thing and it really caught on. And I kept writing more Ren Wars books and they really sold. And that kind of got my name out there to begin with. So the Ren Wars saga itself is about a guy who just loses everything in life. And he becomes like this very dark figure, this very powerful sorcerer who ends up kind of losing and going to fight for the bad guys. But then it kind of turns out that the bad guys are actually the good guys, and it just kind of gets really kind of convoluted and everything subverts itself. So, but it all comes good, you know, through in the end.
Well, you know, I love a good grimdark series. I tend to like more darker stories, but a good old fashioned, you know, epic fantasy like Dragon Age is just one that I stole my heart back again. So looking forward to get to the Ren Wars saga very soon. Last few things I wanted to ask you. You wrote Dragon Age as a pure stand by itself, standalone, but due to popularity, you have begun to write a sequel to Dragon Age. Is that correct?
Yep, I have begun to write it. It's still in process. It has become much more of I guess I bit off more than I can chew with it, and I've really kind of gotten stagnated and bogged down in the writing. It's about halfway done. The first third of it, I was really happy with, and then it got to about the 50% point, and I really started questioning myself and doubting myself and second guessing myself, and I have gone back and rewritten it quite a few times now at this point, and it's finally kind of starting to shape into something that I'm proud of, but it's still not there and I'm still not secure with it. And I'm not going to be able to release it really until it's something that I'm really proud of. I think kind of one of the things that happened is Dragon Mage had a lot more success than I had anticipated it having. And I just got to this point where, oh my gosh, what if people don't like the sequel? What am I going to do? You know, will that detract from Dragon Mage and what they feel about it? And I kind of became like paralyzed, I guess. So that's kind of where I am with the sequel. And a lot of things happen with my personal life, not going to lie. I've been a very busy person over the past few years. And the combination of it all has just been kind of, I guess, stagnating. But it is moving along. Very slowly, and hopefully it will not go through another iteration. Hopefully I'll just keep going through the end and it will be something that people will enjoy reading.
Well, thanks for sharing, and fingers crossed it all goes smoothly for you. We're all waiting, anticipating what it looks like, and we can't wait to see it when, of course, it comes out. So last question I wanted to ask you, because my hashtag is like under the radar SFF books. Are there any stories or authors who have you read over the years or recently that you deem, quote, under the radar and could use some more support or more eyes on their work?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. There's so many indie authors out there that are so good and kind of underread. One of the people that I just adore is my own editor, Sarah Chorn. Her writing is just so lovely and beautiful. And it just drips with emotion. I mean, so I highly recommend her novels, you know, hugely. Another person, I think he enjoyed a lot of success back with his first series, but I don't think that his more recent series have got the attention that it deserves, and that's Alec Hudson. Alec Hudson wrote The Crimson Queen, pretty popular back in the day, but he's put out several books since then that are just amazing. But again, I don't think that they're getting the attention that they deserve. And he actually just had a new release, and I am just started reading it, and it's shaping up to be fantastic again. Jen Hearn is another person, J.D.L. Russell. God, there's so many people that I just really, really would love to recommend. Let's see here, Phil Tucker, I guess, you know, I'm trying to think of people that are not huge, that people that actually, you know.
The whole point of what I'm trying to do is get more eyes on authors and series that deserve it. So, and yours is definitely one of them. And before we sign off, tell our audience where they could find you, your website, your social media handle, and where they can find your books.
Okay, well, my books are on Amazon, like the ebook. I think you could probably order my paperbacks or my hardcovers from just about anywhere. My website is mlspencerfiction.com. And yeah, I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. So I'm pretty easy to find if you're looking for me.
Awesome. This has been such a fun interview. Thank you so much for joining me. ML, and hopefully we'll get to do this again sometime. Maybe the lead up party for the sequel to Dragon Mage, wherever that may come out.
That would be wonderful. Thank you so much for having me today.
Anytime. Okay, everybody. Cheers.